CISO was building out the team, and I'd run into him now and again, and we'd have a, you know, brief, like, hey, how you doing? What are you working on? Kind of chat. And one day I said, I think in a few more years, I was an auditor for just shy of 2 years at that point. I said, I think in a few more years, I'd like to come join your team if I can and do GRC stuff. Because I felt like, you know, I can get my hands dirtier, right? I can influence things, and I can have a positive effect on, you know, the posture of our organization. So he said to me, he goes, why wait a few years? Why not now? And I'm like, I was stunned. I was like, okay. And so I had a pretty serious conversation with him and someone else on the team, and next thing I know, they got a job posted. I applied for it, and I got the job. And so yeah, I've been doing that for the last 6 years or so, 7 years. I've been leading the team for about 3, and every single day, despite the fact that my sister-in-law thinks my job sounds super boring, every single day is something new and exciting.
Yo, what's up, everybody? I'm Kenny Scott. I'm the host of the Paramify podcast. Today, we're super excited to have with us Brian Martinez, a leading expert in governance, risk, and compliance. We love our GRC nerds, and Brian is Brian could be counted as one. He's got over 2 decades of experience. He's been at Michigan State University and working in the broader cybersecurity community. As the governance, risk, in compliance lead at MSU, Brian has spearheaded a lot of critical security projects and compliance frameworks, contributing significantly to the university's research and security posture. Beyond MSU, he's got the little hoodie on right there. Beyond MSU, he's a director at MISEC. And so he's also got some volunteer work that he's done in the past with ISC Squared in developing the CISSP certification exam. So we know who to blame for those of us who have taken.
Yes.
Excited to learn about your approach for GRC and academia. Brian, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to have you on.
Hey, I really appreciate you having me on. Great intro there. I didn't even give you anything. So you're really good at you know, breaking things down based off of LinkedIn and whatever other info you could find. So thank you for that.
So Brian,
yeah.
Okay, let's start. So when I was in third grade, I didn't think I would be an IT auditor or a compliance person or cyber anything. When you were in third grade, I bet you didn't want to think much about controls or being an accountant or anything like
definitely
that.
Definitely not.
How did you get into this? Tell us how you got into cyber and GRC.
Yeah. It's an interesting thing. I will say, actually, in third grade, I certainly didn't think about being an auditor or even a, you know, an InfoSec manager. That wasn't even a thing when I was in third grade. But I was really into computers. I didn't actually own a computer, but you know, we'd go to school, we'd have the Apple IIes, and we used to write basic programs and stuff like that. And I remember my third grade teacher would be like, Brian is working on computers at an eighth grade level. And I was like,
oh, whoa,
maybe I want to work in computers. I don't know. But I actually didn't get my first computer until my freshman year of college, which was back in 1997, where I also went to Michigan State University.
Hey.
So interestingly, I went to college to be a journalist. I was really into writing. I was actually thinking about double majoring, journalism and poli-sci. I was really into like radical politics and stuff like that. Freshman year, it was Journalism 101. We had a guest speaker. I don't remember if it was the Detroit News or if it was the news station up in Detroit. But so one of the journalists there came in, was a guest speaker, and they said, hey, kids, when you graduate from J school, as they call it, when you graduate from J school, you're going to work about 80 hours a week and you make about 20 grand a year. And I was like, well, like, I want to write like some niche stuff So that's like mainstream making 20 grand a year, right? Like, I'm like, maybe this is not for me. Around that time, I was, you know, like I said, I got my first computer and I wasn't afraid to break it. I was just messing around with my computer constantly, editing the registry. I'm like, I don't know what this does. Let's see what happens. And, you know, it's, you know, I definitely broke my computer a few times and I just format and start over again, right? My first job there, I was installing network cards on computers because computers didn't come with network cards back then. They only came with modems. And so I was installing network cards on computers. And I'm like, yeah, this is, I like this, right? I'm enjoying technology. So I wound up getting a degree in telecommunication ultimately. And I kind of thought what I was getting a degree in was going to be like system administration, network administration. But what it actually wound up being was the track I was in was called Information Systems and Technology Management. And what that meant was you, like I, like if I ever wanted to run Comcast, okay. I have a good sense of how to run a cable company. If I ever wanted to run my own phone network, I have a pretty good sense of how to do that. But part of that stuff was policy. And so in college, that's where I was like, okay, I'm interested in this stuff. My thought was I was actually going to finish up my double degree, my double major, which again, I ended up changing from journalism and poli sci to telecommunication. But I thought I was going to go to law school afterwards. So the policy stuff really caught my eye. And, you know, back then we talked about the Communications Decency Act, DMCA, and all that kind of stuff. And we had projects revolving around those things. But I didn't do a lot of work in that space at the time. I ended up becoming a sysadmin, and I was a sysadmin for Windows systems and Linux systems, actually a whole variety of Unixes, I guess they say, the plural of, or Unixes, whatever. And one day a friend of mine, I had been a sysadmin for about, I'm trying to think here, it's like 12 to 14 years, somewhere around there. No, you know what? No, it was 14 years. I was a sysadmin for 14 years.
It's a long time, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
You know your stuff by then, right?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And a friend of mine, she said, you know, the internal audit department's hiring. You should go work over there. And I'm like, that, no. Like, what?
Right.
And she
how do I get that job? Said no one ever.
Yeah, right. Right. So she said, we should, she goes, just talk to the manager. She was friends with the manager. So she's like, I'll set up a meeting for the two of you. And I said, okay. So we had a good conversation and he was like, I can train people to be an auditor. I can't train people to be a sysadmin. I can't train people to think the way that you think about things, but I can train you to be an auditor. He's like, so you got a really great background, dude. Like, I'd love it if you joined the team.
Oh, really?
So I applied, I ended up getting the job and I spent a couple of years over there. An interesting thing that happened and maybe I shouldn't dive into it because it could pinpoint somebody, but I won't name names, but the interesting thing that happened was my manager hired me and then a couple of weeks later he left to start the GRC team that I'm now also leading. So anyway, I spent a couple of years in audit and I actually found that it kind of got me back in touch with communicating, right, with writing. And I was like, you know what, I really kind of like this. You were an auditor, right? Part of your job, at least as an internal auditor, I think is kind of the same as an external auditor, although you're probably being paid by the hour and maybe you don't get as much time to do this. But part of it is breaking down those walls and building trust, right? Because you're going into those places like, hey, I got to talk to you about controls and what you're doing and not doing. And people don't want to share that info with you because they're worried they're going to get, you know, in trouble or something.
That's right.
And so I found I was really good at establishing rapport, right? We would use OSINT to look into the people we're going to be talking to ahead of time. And I would try to find...
What's OSINT for the...
Thank you. Yeah. Open Source Intelligence.
Okay.
So just, you know, like hopping on Google or LinkedIn and searching up the person. I might do a little bit of Facebook stalking, maybe. I'm not going to like befriend somebody, but just to see if there's like, oh, they're really into horses or, you know, bowling or whatever, right? Something that I can say, like, I can use this as a building point, right? Of building that trust. And I would go deep diving into people too far, right? I wasn't like, I'm not stalking. I just want enough that I can build a business relationship, right?
Sure. Yeah.
And you got to write all this down, right? I had a meeting today with so-and-so. We talked about these things, setting another meeting to dive deeper into controls on X system that they manage. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we go back for the next meeting. I go through the checklists, you know, the programs that we had built, the audit programs we had built. And, you know, to me, it was enjoyable, right? It was getting me back in touch with my writing roots, my communication roots. Mm-hmm. I'm able to parlay my technical knowledge into, you know, reports that, you know, the board's going to read, the president's going to read. And it was really, honestly, I was like, this is actually kind of a pretty cool job.
Totally.
Certainly never, I didn't consider it originally, right?
Right, right.
And yeah. One of the things that was frustrating about it, though, was, you can't touch things, right? You can't, you can try to influence, but you don't really have that level of control over the destiny of the organization.
Totally. It's hard to have skin in the game when you're an auditor.
Right. Yes. Right. Yes.
Which people resent sometimes, and you have to really focus on that relationship you did. Right.
Yes. Yeah.
Yep.
So around that time, like I said, the dude who hired me went and started the GRC team. and so the InfoSec team at MSU was starting out, right? We had hired our first CISO. This is back around 13, 14. And the CISO was building out the team. And I'd run into him now and again. And we'd have a, you know, brief, like, hey, how you doing? What are you working on? Kind of chat. And one day I said, I think in a few more years, I was an auditor for just shy of 2 years at that point. I said, I think in a few more years, I'd like to come join your team if I can and do GRC stuff. Because I felt like, you know, I can get my hands dirtier, right? And I can influence things. Yeah, I can have hopefully a positive effect on, you know, the posture of our organization.
And, 100%.
And he said to me, he goes, why wait a few years? Why not now? And I'm like, I was stunned. I was like, okay.
Well,
so I had a pretty serious conversation with him and someone else on the team. And next thing I know, they got a job posted. I applied for it and I got the job.
And, that's awesome.
So I've been doing that for the last, 6 years or so, 7 years.
Yeah.
I've been leading the team for about three, and every single day, despite the fact that my sister-in-law thinks my job sounds super boring, every single day is something new and exciting. There's never a dull day over on the GRC team.
I can imagine that's quite a responsibility, InfoSec at a international university, basically.
Yep.
Right. And I love your, I'll just comment real quick. I had a similar arc, right? So I was external auditor and I did consulting a little bit, you know, and then I did internal audit.
Yep.
And then I had other internal roles and then went into the CISO organization at Adobe, right? And then later, you know, we went, then I was just a consultant and I started my business. So I found it's really great it's great learning to be an auditor because you get to be you get to be kind of an ignoramus. You were absolutely not, because you knew the questions to ask and you knew what could go wrong beforehand. I didn't really have that. I had some programming background, right? But like that really helps. But I like it from the audit perspective. You have this kind of shield that you have your seniors, your managers that can help you and everything. It's really a great way to go.
Right.
But then, like you said, at some point you don't want to be auditing. You really want to be helping to solve the problem. So I totally identify with that, and I think a lot of people do. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
But so, audit, you know, I'll be honest. Like, audit was great. You get to be your own boss. It felt like, right? You know, you've got your marching orders, but you figure out how to get it done, and that was kind of a cool thing.
Yeah.
So anyway.
So we went into that arc. So tell us how GRC has, you've been in this a long time. Tell us how it's evolved over the years, particularly now. We've seen a lot of new things. We've seen cloud take over since you've been doing it, right?
Yep.
We've seen now AI. So what are some of the things that have evolved and what has stayed the same? And what do you, what has stayed the same? I don't want to ask you too many, but what do you expect to stay the same throughout the years?
No, that's a really good question. I'm going to start with what's stayed the same, if you don't mind, because I do want to share a quick related anecdote about that, and that's when I first started doing the GRC thing. Lots of folks, new hires on the security team, even who were not GRC analysts. Lots of folks like, what is GRC? Like, I don't understand. And and to be perfectly frank with you, even though I was on the team now, I was like, I don't even know if I really understand. Like, I don't know if I understand it. But we started having conversations, and one of the things that stood out to me was, I'd start with questions back. I'd be like, well, what are you working on, right? And then what is your approach to things? And people be like, well, we got to consider the risk. And I'm like, you're not a GRC analyst. You're doing GRC things, right? Like, you're making, you're trying to make informed decisions about, how you want to, move a project, or how you want to set up a new system, because you're thinking about risk, right? As a security analyst, as an operations analyst, or even an incident responder. And so that was an interesting thing to me. Like, lots of people are doing GRC, maybe not formally. And I think a lot of people don't even know that they're actually performing some of the GRC functions themselves. So I found that to be very interesting. And I still find that to be case now. But as far as like, what has stayed the same, maybe more specifically, still concerned about policy constantly, always. What's changed is there's new policy, there's new regulations, all those things that we need to read up on. CMMC, that's the big thing recently. And that's a really big thing at a research university.
Tell us a little bit about that then. Yeah. So why is that such a big deal?
Yeah. So, for folks not in the know who might be listening, CMMC, Cybersecurity Maturity Model Certification, basically it's a certifying program that the federal government is sponsoring that says if you're going to work with controlled unclassified information, or CUI, some people call it, CUI, you need to be meeting these sets of controls. And it rather closely mirrors what's called NIST, the National Institute of Science and Technology, the NIST Special Program 800-171. There are some differences here and there, right? And I'm not going to dive real deep into it, but
sure.
But it closely mirrors that. And, being a research institution, we have lots of contracts with the federal government. And in particular, we have some contracts with the Department of Defense. So this is stemming from the DOD. And like I said, they say, if you're going to be working with our data, you got to be doing these security controls. Now, here's where it gets really interesting. For a few years, a lot of folks were operating under what they called CMMC version 1.0. And 1.0 said, hey, you got to be doing these controls. You have to attest that you're doing them. You might get audited. But if you're not doing the controls, you can lay out what's called a POAM, or a plan of action memorandum, saying, basically spelling out, we're not doing this right now. We will be doing this by this date. And that'll go into what they call your system security plan. A lot of folks, and this isn't specific to MSU, this is a lot of government contractors and subcontractors, we're testing like, hey, yeah, we're doing this, or we're getting close. They'd build out their POAMs, and then, for reasons, they just would never follow through. And so the government said, this isn't good enough. So now they're coming out with CMMC version 2.0, and they simplify the control space. So, maybe you don't need to meet 171 controls. Maybe you only need to actually meet like 18, because maybe you're not dealing with, a certain level of controlled and classified information, or certain types of information. And in level two, basically what they're saying is, once they finalize it, which they haven't yet, but once they finalize version 2.0, it's going to be the case that you can't work with government data until you have actually attested and proved that you are compliant. And so that presents a real challenge, not just for universities, but, you know, lots of government subcontractors and contractors, because if you're not doing all of these controls, you know, this huge control space, that costs money, right? And so that's going to be a burden on the organization that's trying to work with this data.
Right. Do you ever run into people that just get totally overwhelmed by that kind of ask? You know, they're saying, hey, you know, here's 100 or so controls, but really underneath those, there's like all those requirements of things they're looking for, right? You know, like the things that they're attesting to. So what is your experience with that? And how do you guys kind of help kind of allay some of those fears?
Sure. Well, let's also kind of answer some of your first questions too about what's changed and what's stayed the same. If you don't mind me getting more non-specific to CMMC, regulations and control frameworks. There are so many. And that's also something I want to impress upon folks, that at a university, you know, you're not just focused on like GLBA or PCI DSS. At a university as large as the one I work at, right, you have PCI DSS, HIPAA, FERPA, which is student data. We have our own power plant, so we have NERC SIP things that we need to be concerned about. We actually have a system that handles criminal justice information. So we have CJIS data that we need to worry about. And, you know, ITAR, export control stuff. I think I sat down a few months ago, and we have, at least on the IT side of things, somewhere between 10 to 15 regulations that we need to have at least some level of knowledge about. Sometimes there's overlap amongst all of these regulations, right? So it's like, well, yeah, we're doing all this with PCI DSS, and that's also true for our whole network. So of course we meet these controls. But that's kind of where, to me, what CMMC is trying to accomplish for organizations. At least in
trying
higher
to find
ed,
those I, capabilities,
ahead,
right? Those,
yes,
they're trying to
yes.
find those common capabilities that you should have regardless of just the cybersecurity in general. Which is, you know, at big companies, no one wants to look at it as, you know, thousands of different disparate requirements. They want someone who is really good at understanding GRC, and they want them to take care of the reporting for them, right?
Yeah.
You want, if you take like a requirement, you kind of like DDoS the organization. Right.
Because they're
like, hey, what's being asked of me? And they need to understand the context of what's being asked. And how do I need to understand how do I need to implement this so that I satisfy them? And then how do I report on this in the way that they want to handle it? So all that context, people get overwhelmed.
Right.
And so it's good that we try to find those common solutions, right, that handle everything.
That's the way that some things have remained the same, right? At the high level is like, let's try to simplify this for the organization. We've got all these regulations that we got to worry about. Let's just try to do this across the board. And certainly some things need to be segmented, right? PCI networks shouldn't touch your other networks unless you want to bring everything into scope, right? If we can do this at a much higher level across the board, we'll make things easier, and we'll not overwhelm the organization with you know, like, well, here's 1,000 controls that we need to do. Well, hey, we're doing this one thing, and that checks these 25 boxes, right? So we're good across these, you know, this mass of regulations. That's one of the ways that GRC has remained the same over the years is, you know, it's always going to be about, you know, policy interpretation, communicating risk to the organization, and then compliance. An old coworker of mine used to say, risk is our middle name. And I agree very strongly with that. A GRC team at my institution, at least, and I think maybe higher ed across the board, risk is often the strongest area, but compliance is the heaviest area, right? because there's so many areas of compliance that a school needs to be worried with or worried about.
Right. Totally. Totally. You mentioned CMMC is kind of like that standard. Sorry, getting back into. CMMC, but it's kind of funny how you remember that. I don't know if you've seen that XKCD where it's like, hey, there's like 14 competing standards, and it goes 14 ridiculous. We need to develop one that universal standard that it covers everyone, every use case, and they're like, yeah. And then so now we have like 15 competing standards. Right. I feel like CMMC is not going to be the last one. I mean, I
don't think it will
continue. Yeah,
I don't think it will be. And if I can share, this is my personal opinion. Maybe a two-parter. I think it's a good thing, particularly for a research institution. Maybe not private enterprise, but what I like about it is it's finally the government coming in and saying enough of this terribleness, right? Like, we need to standardize on something, and you know, they're the biggest customer pretty much across the board in the United States, right? The federal government is, and so they've got a lot of weight that they can throw around and say this is the way it has to be. The other thing that is I don't know if enjoy is the right word, but I'm going to say enjoy about CMMC is right now, you know, we're seeing this related to like say controlled and classified information. So when our institution has contracts related to that, you know, we're gonna have to test like, hey, this is a thing. Yeah, we're doing it or we're not doing it. Therefore we'll lose the contract. But I'm hearing grumbling that a lot of other government entities, not just the DOD, are moving this direction. Right. So, that'll be, I think, a very positive thing for a university where it's like, well, if you were already doing this for the small group of research, well, now here's an even bigger body of research. You're already doing it, so this should be easy at this point, right?
Totally.
What we see a lot of is every government institution has something a little different, right? It all largely revolves around NIST, you know, 853 or 171 or 63, the risk management framework, I think. There's all these questions about something. But if they could standardize on that, that's going to make everybody's job easier in higher ed. So I'm kind of excited about that.
Great. So yeah, you're kind of champions of standards, right? Yep. We all want them. It gets complicated really fast. So how do you typically approach, you know, so you said, your guy said your middle name's Risk, right? So how do you typically approach assessments and, you know, what kind of impact are you looking to have, you know, when you do these?
Yeah. So it's an interesting thing, where I'm at. Risk that's the name of the game for us. Everything is risk. And something else I'll mention, kind of a difference in higher ed versus other sectors is, confidentiality is really the name of the game in the CIA triad, right? Confidentiality, integrity, and, availability. You know, certainly integrity and availability are important, but confidentiality is everything for us. And some of those other ones are weightier in other organizations, right? Like in a bank, integrity is probably going to be the biggest factor for them. Confidentiality probably coming a very close second, and availability an extremely close third, right? But
for
ensuring that those numbers match.
For education versus something else like, you know, energy, right? Yeah. You know,
yeah, yes.
Might be a little different, right?
Yeah. Availability would be number one there, right?
exactly. So risk is important. Risk drives everything, right?
Risk is really important. Yeah. And what makes I imagine this is similar to other organizations, but I don't know that for a fact. But our GRC team at MSU is, you know, we basically serve as security consultants. We're supposed to be knowledgeable enough in just about everything that we can at least, even if we don't know the answer, we can at least know where to turn in the organization, right? So we need to have a really thorough understanding of this team manages the networks and this team manages the firewall and this team manages the VPN and all that kind of stuff. We don't need all the deep technical knowledge on those things, but we need to know where to ask questions. So we serve as general consultants, not just for pointing people in a direction or another, but let's have conversations about risk. You're trying to stand up this new project that's going to be collecting, student names, their grades, their course schedule and all that kind of stuff. Well, how are we going to protect this data? FERPA, the regulation that talks about protecting student data, it isn't very prescriptive. It's really open to interpretation, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
Unlike PCI DSS, which is extremely prescriptive,
totally.
At least compared to FERPA. So that presents challenges, right? And so you need to be really well-versed in being able to communicate things. You need to be able to read things and understand them. But the way I explain GRC to people who aren't even techie type people at MSU is like, well, we're consultants, right? You got questions, you come talk to us. We're the front door for the security team. Come in our door, talk to us. And then, like I said, if we got to point you somewhere else, we will. But the tricky thing is there is a short period of time where not something that we're proud of, but this happens to a lot of organizations. We suffered a large breach. And we had a 5-year plan on the security team that turned into a 5-month plan. I think you're about to ask me a question. Go ahead.
No, I'm just commenting. It's everybody gets breached, right?
Yeah.
We're supposed to assume breach.
Right.
And then when it actually happens, it tends to get, the story tends to get out of control, right? But of course that happens, right? It's just how are you going to respond to it? So.
Right.
And then
we responded rapidly and well, in my opinion. Our 5-year plan became our 5-month plan. And then our team kind of turned into the police, which isn't what we should be, right? but I mean, we had to start somewhere because there was a number of things that we just weren't doing. And so, once we, we're kind of done being the police, we're like, well, everyone is familiar with expectations, what the processes should be, where the request should go. Let's start giving trust back to the organization, right? Like, we can trust our colleagues to get their job done. And if they've got questions, again, we're here, right? Come talk to us. So, the tricky thing is some of the folks that kind of worked through that and still work here, it's like, well, GRC has the answer. And it's like, well, no. Again, we're supposed to be the consultants. We'll give you advice and hopefully great advice. hopefully you'll follow it. We're giving you a recommendation, right? We're not responsible for the decision here. We're telling you like, yeah, this appears low risk based on our assessment. We recommend that you proceed. Or we might say, hey, this is pretty high risk. We wouldn't do this. Like, you shouldn't do this. But it's the business's decision, right? If they're going to take on that risk or not. And so that gets to be a tricky thing because sometimes people just think, well, GRC needs to make the decision. Well, no. Like, you need to make the decision. We just need to inform you. Right.
Yeah.
So
what do you think about that whole SolarWinds thing and the CISO basically, that everything kind of changing the game, right? Because if the CISO has, I mean, to me, it feels a little bit off, right? It's not the CISO's responsibility to make a business decision for everything.
Right.
They do need to help. There's a lot of stuff that they need to do, right? Like, absolutely, their security program needs to be up and running. They need to exercise due care and make sure that they're evaluating things. But ultimately, so what are your thoughts there? I mean, I guess I kind of tipped my hat to...
Yeah.
showed my hand right there. Right.
Oh, you're all good.
You know what I think?
It's interesting because I understand the need for an organization to have someone fall on their sword, right? You're the person closest associated with security. So you got to go. We made a bad decision, right? I understand the need to try to save face. I'm not saying that it's right, but I get it. But keeping in mind that, being in this industry as long as we both have, right? We know the phrase, right? It's not if, but when that breach happens, right? Everybody's going to get breached if you somehow haven't been breached yet. One day, unfortunately, it will.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, And with that in mind, though, like it helps to have an organization that understands that and is willing to learn in that space, right? A breach happened. Okay, what went wrong? How can we fix it and make sure it doesn't happen again? Rather than throwing someone under a bus saying like, well, this is your fault, right? The CISO shouldn't own the final decision on whether something happens, but they should have, you know, probably a weighty influence on it. If there's something that's extremely high risk to an organization, the CISO should probably step in and say, this shouldn't be it. In SolarWinds' case, I don't know. I don't remember all the details about everything that went wrong there.
Honestly, me neither.
Yeah, but you know, was that the CISO's fault that there was, you know, an exploit in their software? Maybe. I don't know. Did the CISO tell them they should be running, some sort of AppSec program and running their code through that, right? Static code analysis.
I mean, they were doing things, right? They weren't doing nothing. It's just you don't know what you don't know. And that is risky. And obviously, right, we can all do better, right? But it is really critical, right, that organizations figure out how they're going to respond, you know, if and when there is an issue, and be building out that GRC function early on in the life cycle of the business, right? Because it's absolutely critical, right? Because if you don't have it, dang, man, that's painful, right? So in your case, you guys did have a function and you're able to respond, quickly, right? And well, right. Yeah. Quick question, man. So you hire GRC folks, right, on your team.
Yep.
What are some of the things you're looking for when you're interviewing candidates? People just wanting to get into GRC, what do you recommend to them? So those are two questions. What are you looking for?
That's a good question. The first person I actually hired, they reached out to me saying their background was more on the programming side. And they're like, should I apply for this job on your team? I was like, let's have a conversation. And we talked about it. And, they had a background as, interestingly, a journalist. You don't need to be a journalist to be a GRC analyst, certainly. But you need to be able to communicate, right? To me, that's the biggest thing I'm looking for is soft skills. How are you going to handle particular situations, even if they're not security related, right? I might not ask you a security scenario type question to gauge your soft skills. I want to know how you're going to handle, if a coworker throws something at you that you weren't expecting. Are you a reflective person, right? The name of the game from where I sit, it's soft skills is the biggest thing, right? Communication, communication, communication. And that's not, it's not like English as a first language necessarily, right? You just need to be able to break things down that are technical and explain them to people in a way that they'll understand.
And be able to partner with them, right? Right. And be able to build that relationship, right?
Yes. I was actually about to get there next, which was you also need to be able to have, I think I was gonna say like a place for empathy, right? Realize that your colleagues at your company are most likely not trying to do the wrong thing. They're not trying to be malicious, right? They just don't know. And so they need someone that can walk hand in hand with them and get them through to the other side. That same person that I just mentioned that reached out to me about the job, they were one of my first hires. They once joked that security is no as a service. And which I thought, everything is as a service anymore, right? So I thought that was pretty funny. But
totally. They're at odds. Security and features and roadmap.
Yes.
They're naturally at odds. So again, it gets back to risk. I know this for sure because I've been, building software company for a while. And I always knew that, I know that you have a real job to do, but you got to do this. And so we are always trying to focus on how do we make this easier for you to do the right thing?
Yeah.
Remove the friction around doing what's wrong and try to make it easier. But man, when I'm making the decisions for our company, security is absolutely a feature, right?
Yeah.
Because it comes down to risk, right? You don't do business. You're not MSU because security, right? You're MSU because you're trying to change the world, make the world a better place, educate people. Right. It's just security helps enable that, right? In today's world, right?
Yep, for sure.
Man.
But similar to what you said, I try to find, I'm like, you're coming to me with a problem. Maybe it's a risk, maybe it's not, but I want to figure out a way that we can get you to do it, right? I don't want to be that heel, right? I want to get to yes, but I want to, you know, mitigate risk as much as we can along the way. Having some room for empathy with what your colleagues, your coworkers, you know, are trying to accomplish. Again, that goes into the soft skills. And really just kind of having, I would say, some basic knowledge about technology. You don't need to have been a sysadmin. You don't need to have been an expert programmer. It helps. It does really help. But if you know that, hey, there's a workstation and there's a server and they communicate to each other and there's DNS and HTTP and all that kind of stuff. If you know the basics, that's largely enough. Having some sense of how a business operates too, right, is also extremely helpful. Because that's part of that risk management function, right? You can't describe risk to a business if you don't know how a business works.
That's right. Yeah. That's where audit helps, right? If you go into audit first, right? So I loved having my audit background because it gave me that safe space basically to learn all of that stuff. And, you know, from my colleagues, I found out about, whoa, that was a pretty crazy finding you had, or like, oh, you know, when we're talking about really crazy things that have happened and how control can help mitigate that. So having that background for me was like just super awesome. Right. Yeah. And then, just kind of building out those other, those soft skills. I 100% agree, man.
Yeah. The last thing I'd say about it is simply just excitement about security. It doesn't have to be GRC, but just excitement about security, right? That's a big thing. I'd be willing to take on someone that shows potential, like they've been learning. Oh, I got my pen test plus. I'd be willing to take a pen tester on a GRC team, even though they're not doing GRC, right? Like they're excited about it. Oh, and I want to get my offensive security cert, right? Or, you know, whatever they want to do, just have that excitement about security will also really help you get your foot in the door at the very least.
Finding a knowledge pig, someone who's just hungry, right? Wants to learn. Yes, yeah, those are the people I want to be in the arena with. And those are the people 100%. that are trying to become really the very best version of themselves. That, you know, people talk a lot. There's a lot of emphasis on culture and building, like, you know, in ping pong tables and all that other stuff, right? And in time off and, you know, paternity, maternity, whatever it is, right? To me, a great culture comes from finding those special people that are really just wanting to learn and just get better and better and better. And what a great world to be in.
Yeah.
What are some of the things, what do you see in the future for GRC, right? So we talked about what's changed and what's the same. What do you see in the future? Maybe that might be a little different that we haven't talked about already.
To me, what I see as big to-dos coming down the line are, it's going to be more compliance. It's going to be the CMMC stuff, right? That's going to get heavy, probably starting next year for sure. But AI is another interesting area, and in particular in higher ed, because lots of professors want to use it, lots of students want to use it for their papers, right? How do we approach that problem? How do we use it in a positive way and ensure that we're not, handing over all of our data to OpenAI, things like that, right? So AI presents some interesting opportunities. How do we even utilize it as a team, right? We're not doing a lot of that right now, at least where I'm at. I don't know if there's any other GRC teams utilizing AI. I think you've got a product that uses some stuff for documentation.
Totally.
To put a pitch in there. Yeah.
It's all good, man.
I'm
excited about AI and tools in general and GRC because I do think, you know, the kinds of talent that you're attracting for GRC roles, man, I mean, you get really good people that really can really help an organization. And the more you get them out of the managing thousands of different documents and thousands of different requirements and more standardized approach, the better off we'll be. And we'll have a, you know, we'll be able to actually, you know, help the organizations a lot more. A lot of times we're all stretched, right? We can't possibly do enough, you know, to assess all risk when you're dealing with, you know, basically a huge city
in that year, and so
we want tools to help us do a better job, and I think the future is bright in GRC, man.
Yeah, I think so too.
Man, it's so good to have you on, Brian. Thanks so much, and looking forward to following up with you in the years to come, man. Thanks, dude.